So last time I spoke to them, just a couple of days ago, they mentioned that their power and water had been knocked out by Russian airstrikes. So they were kind of running off USB battery banks, and they were cycling to a well to fetch water.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast, your meeting place for all things bikes, adventures, and the stories that follow. I'm your host, Charles Detmer. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Gravel Junction podcast. It's a pleasure to have you as always. So this week's episode is a little bit later than normal, a little bit later than planned, and for good reason. There were a lot of moving parts in this particular episode, and so I wanted to make sure to get all the facts, all the information, and collate it the best way I could so as to bring the full story. We have a number of guests on the show today, starting with Artem, who you might remember from our Bespoke Handbuilt Bike Show episode 2 weeks ago. Artem was at the show representing two brands, Seven Roads Bags and Lazarus Cycling, both of which are from the Ukraine. And so needless to say, they had very good reason for not being at the show. So while talking to Artem at the show, I really was quite captivated by the whole story behind these brands that are still making or managing to create product, put product out there, despite the unimaginable difficulties that they're undergoing. And I thought it was important to tell the story for a number of reasons. Firstly, after doing research and digging deeper into the show, to understand that there are so many still operating businesses in Ukraine that are desperate, again, for obvious reasons, for people to know that they're operating so that they can sell, so they can have an income to support themselves and their families during this extremely difficult time. And so if I could help in some small way and through this podcast to shine a light on that, to let people know we can support them in a very mutualistic way, then let's do that. And then I just became further encapsulated by the idea after speaking to Elena and Stanislav from Seven Roads, just the circumstances that they're in and their positive attitude and how they are going about their everyday. As you'll hear in the episode, the reason that I was hoping to get Artem, Elena, and Stanislav all on the same call, but I couldn't because they'd recently been bombed, and so they were without power and electricity and water and had been running on battery banks, etc. As luck would have it, if that's the appropriate term, after hanging up with Artem, I got a message from Elena that their power had just come back on and they'd be able to sit down and the internet was up and running and we could have a chat. So that is kind of how the episode unfolds today. First of all, I speak with Artem and his own personal experience being from Ukraine originally, having lived in the UK for most of his life, but still having friends and family and the difficulties of that. And then part two, chatting with Elena and Stanislav, or Stan, to hear their points of view and how they're managing the situation was fascinating. And I hope you enjoyed that as much, or enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it and creating the episode. So it's a slightly longer one than normal, but I didn't want to cut any parts and I wanted the whole story to be told. And at the end, we'll talk more after we've heard the interviews, but I would like you to really start thinking of ways that we can help the likes of Seven Roads Bags and the Ukrainian people by not charity, but by supporting industry that through rather ingenious ways is continuing to operate. Just a quick note on audio quality. At the time of recording, I unfortunately did not have access to my usual recording location, but due to obvious circumstances, I was reluctant to reschedule the recording. So I just went along with it. So it's a slightly echoey recording from my behalf. May or may not have noticed it, but I noticed these things, so I wanted to bring it up. But I do feel the story more than makes up for the slightly less than ideal audio quality. But that's enough of that. Here is my interview with Artem, Elena, and Stanislav. Enjoy.
But all right, I mean, let's just get straight into it. So sitting here with Artem, listeners may or may not remember from my last episode from Bespoked, our team was at the Bespoke Handbuilt Bike Show representing, and just want to get this right, 7R Bags and Lazarus Cycling. That's correct?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So for the listeners, this is going to be a piece that's going to, an episode that's going to be pieced together because we were hoping to have 7R Bags with us today while recording. But as our team can kind of give us more information, we were just talking off air as to the reason why they haven't joined us. If you could just tell us again, our team, why haven't 7R Bags joined us at the moment?
So last time I spoke to them, just a couple of days ago, they mentioned that their power and water had been knocked out by Russian airstrikes. So they were kind of running off USB battery banks and they were cycling to a well to fetch water. The situation all over the country is quite severe with Russian attacks several times a day all over the country. It seems as though their goal is to knock out Ukrainian infrastructure, civilian infrastructure mainly, just before winter sets in to sow panic and fear and to make life as miserable as possible for the Ukrainians. So repair crews are very active. Power and water substations are being repaired, but there are constant fresh strikes every day. So it is quite difficult at the moment. But there are strikes all over the country, as far as Lviv, which is fairly close to the Polish border. So there are ongoing strikes all over the country. It's a new and concerted effort to try and decimate all civilian infrastructure in Ukraine.
Yeah, to really damage people's morale, as you say, as the onset of winter and things, and really just some terrible tactics there. Are you in daily contact with friends and family in Ukraine, so you're kind of hearing these sort of stories and updates every day, I imagine?
Yes, almost daily. The majority of my family live in Kyiv. They're all in Kyiv still, and Kyiv was relatively safe for the last few months since Ukraine army pushed the Russian army back, but there have been constant aerial strikes for the last week and a half.
Yeah, okay, I've seen that ramping up. Okay, well, as I say, I'm still very much educating myself and being digging deeper as to what's going on in Ukraine, because it seems like a lot of things with international press, it goes in cycles, right? When it's in favor and it's new, you get all the coverage, and then it slowly starts to sort of fall away from people's memories. And that's another reason why I felt it was important to try and tell this story, both from not a political point of view, from a political understanding of what is going on the ground, as well as trying to also show the benefits and positive sides of how the Ukrainian people, such as Elena and Stavislav from 7R Bags, how they continue to get on with life, you know, and ensuring that they're not going to be put down and subdued. So perhaps in the interim, you could describe again for us how you came to represent them at Bespoke Show and how they came along, because I thought that was a pretty cool story.
Yeah, so I started out as just a customer of theirs, which I still basically am. I bought a couple of bags from Seven Roads, and I bought a seat post from Lazarus as well, who are another Ukrainian company, and got the stuff. I was quite surprised that Postal Service was still working and is as efficient as it is. The bags I received were really cool, and they were made in custom colours. So I was speaking to the guys from Seven Roads to choose the colours and stuff for the bags, and in the process of speaking to them, obviously touched upon the situation, how easy it is to get hold of materials, how their personal and family situation is at the moment. And then it just so happened that an old friend of mine called Josh from the UK, he bought the rights to the bike show, Bespoke. And so one thing led to another. And I spoke to Josh, and he offered to host Seven Roads and Lazarus.
How did you originally discover Seven Roads and Lazarus Cycling? Just kind of through the grapevine or social media?
I was in a market for some bike packing bags, and they've got an online social media presence. And it wasn't until after I looked at their website that I realized that they're based in Ukraine. So it's kind of by chance, yeah.
Yeah, because I've been, you know, in prepping for the show, I was doing some research and digging around and watched their little video on their website talking about it. And it just, I was fascinated by, and that's why I can't wait to get them on the show to talk about the level of details and the materials and the level of customability and the value as well. Looking at, you know, it looks really, really good value. And like you take their seat packs with the little stainless steel frame, it's, they've thought about the issues you have with bike packing and they've tried to fix it, which is great. And having seen the products myself in at Bespoke, like it's quality and In my previous life working at Seed, I know the product Dyneema very well, and the fact that they're using that, I know how what an amazing product that is as well. So it just shows you how many people out there are making amazing things, and you know, sometimes it's hard to get spotted, but hopefully with platforms like Bespoke, things will get seen, and it's great to see that. I take it then that you bought the product fairly recently.
It was a couple of months ago that I bought a seat pack and a handlebar bag from them, and they arrived in just over a week to London, which was extremely impressive and fairly unexpected. But yeah, the postal service, the export via rail, because there aren't any flights, civilian flights, just over Ukraine at the moment. Then once it's in Poland, gets air freighted or freighted by truck.
Are there any other initiatives that people can here in the UK or anyone listening that they can get involved in to sort of help the Ukrainian people? Are there funds? Are there programs? What would be a good place for people to start?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are hundreds of funds and smaller charities. I actually had a period where I felt a bit impotent and powerless after giving a lot of money at the start of the war to the larger faceless charities, kind of not knowing where the money's going to end up, and had a look around, and there are lots and lots of small groups and charities that offer aid on the ground. For example, there's a group of young people that that buy timber and drive around the countryside fixing roofs of houses that have been damaged by shelling. That's helping people that would otherwise never have the means to repair their houses. There are hundreds of charities that bring groceries to isolated people and older people. There are groups of people who repair public infrastructure as well, just off their own backs, and they all need funding. I'll send you a list of actual links.
If you could do that, that'd be great. I'll put in the show notes, because I think one of the things that, as you were talking there, what I, you know, I say this in most of my episodes, like one of my driving energies behind the show is storytelling, and because I think the power of storytelling is it helps you give a face to something. And like those, the way you were describing those smaller charities, you know, you could picture these people going around using their skills and how, where your donation has, you have more of a, how do I put this, a clearer picture of how your donation is actually helping. As you say, it's not faceless, it's not nameless. And it's a story you could probably follow along, you know, that you could see the progress and how you're able to affect positive change with those donations. And I think that's powerful on two ends, because besides giving the money, by having that story told and understood, it gives people hope, I think, I'd like to think, by being able to help those smaller charities.
Yeah, it's also really good to see exactly what these guys are doing and know that that the funds that they receive are going entirely to fund their efforts.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like a lot of these where you click on the donation button and you get a thank you email. And that's the end of it. You just hope that it's got to the other end of the line. At a time like this, the more people that are spreading this sort of messages and the more of these smaller programs that are helped out, the more of an effect you can have. So kudos to you, Artem, for understand. Obviously, you have a direct, you know, your family and friends. So you have a very direct connection to what is going on there. But still, it can't be an easy situation being, and this is something we discussed at the show, geographically being where you are, it must be difficult because it's very far away from home and family. And I think for a lot of people, I imagine there's a slight feeling of helplessness at times. And this is where these sort of programs we're discussing now, I'm sure, can help.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like you mentioned, I found myself stuck in a cycle of doom scrolling at the start of the war, just spending most of the day looking at the news and Twitter threads and analysis, speaking to relatives. And it's very helpful to break that cycle of kind of rage and impotence by sort of getting more involved and not blindly sending money to faceless charities.
Almost a case of being almost proactive instead of reactive, by by being active in what you're doing there, it gives you that sense of, okay, I'm not just, I'm forward progression, and that one step at a time. And, you know, the more and more people doing that, that starts to eventually affect serious and tangible change, which hopefully, and I think a lot of people, I think there was a wave of it, but I am getting the sense that there needs to be a reminder in a way for a lot of people of what is still going on, continues to go on in Ukraine. And you know, this goes for many parts of the world, sadly, but right now we're talking about Ukraine and what's going on there. And to serve the point of what we just said, to affect change where we can. You know, we can't fix everything, but we can maybe help fix one thing. And in this regard, I think what you're doing and have been doing, you just take representing these two brands at Bespoke, and how many people walked through that show and were touched by that story, myself included, and help spread the word. That's more than before the show. So that's got to be a positive, right?
And I've had some amazing feedback from having spoken to them after the show. They're so, so happy to have exhibited there, even if not in person. I think it's important to reach out and have conversations with Ukrainians, whether they're makers, whether they're aid workers, even just people you meet online. It really gives them a sense that people around the world do care about them and are on their side.
Give them a voice. No, I can understand exactly what you mean, where that they're not alone, that, as you say, people care, and we should, by showing these everyday stories, be that in this case, we're talking about two cycling brands and their attempt to just get on with everyday normal and create a life for themselves, in itself is a very powerful message in the face of what they are facing, and giving, as you say, a platform and a voice to the everyday person like us and the people in Ukraine is an important step. It's kind of strange how this has sort of progressed, because I've found myself drawn into it more and more, and you start to feel a little more of an attachment and wanting to have, you know, to help out. So, you know, I think let's continue this and put something together that we can put out to, in this case, whoever's listening to the Gravel Junction podcast, to try and affect change. And I just want to say for myself, thank you very much for what you're doing. I think it's really quite inspiring, and for your time today, because it's much appreciated.
Thank you very much. It's really good to be able to speak about these things. It sometimes feels quite isolating, only being able to really speak to friends and family in Ukraine about the way that things are going and kind of breaking through the fatigue that people close at home are feeling about this issue. So appreciate opportunity and time, for sure.
Awesome, Martin. Well, this won't be the last time we speak. Let's make a plan to talk again soon and to build upon this and go from there. And so, yeah, again, thank you very much for your time.
Cheers. Take care.
So I'm here with Lena and Stanislav Stan from Seven Roads Bags, who, as a lot of the listeners will know, we first came across both Seven Roads and Lazarus Cycling at the recent Bespoke Bike Show with Artem, who was very kindly, who I believe, or I know, is a customer of yours, who then we will get into the story, but long story short, reached out and offered to represent your brand at the Bespoke Show. So Lena, Stan, welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit, set the scene, whereabouts are you guys at the moment?
We are located in Kovel. It's near Polish and Belarusia borders.
It's like northwest part of Ukraine, and it's Polisia and Volyn region.
Okay, are you from there originally, or?
No, we are from Kharkiv. Originally, we lived there about 28 years, I think.
26.
Something like this. And then we moved to Kyiv, worked there a little bit, and we don't really like big cities and decided to move somewhere else. And our friend invited us here, and we decided, why not?
Yeah, we love Volyn. Yeah, it's Volyn. It's really cool region for backpacking, because it's like the most sparsely populated region of Ukraine. It's not so much people, a lot of like wild places like forest, rivers. Actually, it's a lake region and river region. It's a lot of swamps here. So there are not too much like villages. So it's pretty cool nature, pretty lonely nature. It's kind of...
And like... it's really, really close to the city. When we lived in a big city, we spent maybe 1 hour to get somewhere in some wild forest,
like...
or some nice place where we want to cycle. And here it's just 10 minutes and we already in the middle of nowhere. Something.
Yeah, it's actually, it's really, when we got blackout today, like electricity fell down, we just spent literally about half an hour to get away from everything. And we spent nice 2-3 hours in the woods. It's kind of cool. And we don't see people at all. Like we didn't see any people.
Yeah, it's kind of, hearing you say that, like, I mean, we'll unpack now this is not a political show and it's not going to be my point here is to hear about your story and your products and, of course, the difficult situation. But it seems quite fascinating that with the difficult situation that's going on around in the Ukraine, that you're able to go and find that, I guess, that bit of calm, bit of peace, and how the bicycle can bring you that, right? Go out, go for a bike ride and kind of clear the mind for what the difficult situations that you're encountering every day.
Yeah, just the way to relax and maybe to forget what's really happening in our real world.
Yeah, we didn't make a lot of overnight rides during this year, but we had few of them, and it's actually cool to find a place without any internet. So it's a little bit like, one side it's really relaxing and another side you don't know what's actually happening. Is there still like your town is still there? Oh, it's cool.
Oh, that, I mean, that's so crazy. I mean, just, I hadn't thought about it that way. You know, most people go, oh, it was so nice to have a weekend without internet. But in your situation, like, internet is news, correct? You come back going, okay, what's happened while we were unplugged? That's surreal. That's really surreal. Okay, well, so let's get into Seven Roads Bags and talk a little bit more about the origins of the brand. How did you come about starting a bikepacking bag company?
It was maybe I think we started about 10 years ago just making bags for ourselves, because in Ukraine there are like pretty poor market for that time of bags and of others like bikepacking stuff. So we started to make by ourselves and by our friends, and we still had work in bike shops, so we didn't try to sell them. And one day we decided, why not? Then we moved to Kovel, tried a bit to make bags, and after that we spent 3 months cycling in Europe. And during this time we thought about how to manage our life, and we decided to make bags in a, like, to make this business like for a full, to make it like
full-time job.
Yeah.
And maybe during this year, like, understand what we want from our products and how.
Sure. Yeah, you've used other products, and you knew what you wanted to do to make it better, to improve that made the product better. In effect,
kind of. Yeah, we for that trip we already used our bags. Everything was made by ourselves. Yeah, but it was in 2016. Yeah, and it wasn't waterproof. You know, it was like Pioneer kind of setup. And it wasn't waterproof, it was like Cardura fabric and something like that. And it was very rainy season. It was very rainy season, and every day we were like getting wet, so we spent a lot of time trying to cover our stuff in some plastic pockets and some rain covers. It was so boring. So we decided that we have to make like perfectly waterproof bags. Do not
it's
have
like
any
must have, yeah.
It's must have process. And we started.
Okay, yeah, and I've seen, I mean, you're working with some pretty technical fabrics now, Dyneema, things like that, lightweight, very waterproof. I love the saddlebag with the stainless, is it stainless steel, the frame? It stops the sway, like,
yeah, just
little ideas, yeah, and how you can turn the saddle pack into a backpack, like all these really clever little ideas. Are those, is that something you kind of specialize in, is taking the everyday bikepacking bags, but adding those little details to differentiate yourself from other companies?
Yeah, we'd like want to like leave maybe something in some way with our bag. It's like we wanted to use it, them like as comfortable as it can be possible.
I was watching the video, your little video on your website, the YouTube chat interview that you had, and like I liked how you said, you know, your bags, for example, you can take it off. If you're bikepacking, sometimes you have to fly. Your luggage, you can pull it off and take it on the plane with you and carry back straps and things like that. And I was like, I'd never even thought about that. It's such a simple concept. Like, how has no one done that yet? It's like, it's really clever, you know, and these are things that people should know about.
I think it's simple. It's simple and very logical idea, but it's make process of making bags more complicated. We make it like mostly like by hands. So it's not like we do not have any some super special stanky
like stuff to produce, so maybe manufacturers, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, the manufacturing techniques and all that, it's relatively quite as you say, quite relatively basic.
We don't have some special machine to weld in our bag, so we make it mostly by our hands and simple techniques. So we just can add one detail and see how it's going. We make, and it's logical to have some as multifunctional bag as possible, especially when you travel some long distance tour or some remote places, areas where you do not have like, I don't know, like any chance to find some new equipment. So you have to have some small, lightweight and very, very multifunctional bags. So you can use it for water, for example. We have some like four bags. You can use it like water, like dry bags, kind of. So you can fill it with water and warm bucket.
I want to say that we are small manufacturer, and for us it's really, I think, easy to make some changes in our bags when we like discover that it really should be
to compare
with big manufacturer.
Because you do a lot of custom work, I see, as well. So you're able to be, I guess they would say in English, you're able to pivot. Like, okay, that doesn't work. Let's make that small change, because you don't have this big production line. So you can be quite dynamic with your designs and with your creations.
Yeah. So we never thought about making bags like, you know, like thousands of them. We just want to make good bags and good products, and we want to keep it interesting by ourselves, like for ourselves. Because it's like kind of boring to make the same thing and just sell them. It's kind of boring. We love to make interesting projects, like for interesting people. We have like, we always spend a lot of time like talking to our customers, you know, trying to understand what they like.
What they really want from their bags, like what bags will make their adventure more interesting and easy.
Kind of easy, more comfortable.
Sorry, I said, do you do a lot of custom work like that? Because I see you do have stock items, but also I saw in your video you mentioned that you do custom. So do you have customers going, right, this is what my bike looks like, this is kind of what I need my bags to do, can you help? And then you create something.
We have some standard kind of typical bags, and they represented our like shop page. These bags like can be customized with colors, with some logos, some like print stuff, some kind of decorations. But in general, they have construction that we do not want to change, because it's already like proven, tested, and so on. but it can be customized with colors, logos, maybe capacity or something like that. And we have frame bags, top tube bags, and I don't know,
recto bags.
These bags is always like custom because there are so much actually different options and we don't want to, and different frames, different racks. So we cannot make some standard bag. So like for Artem, we made a pretty standard seat bag, but with colors that Artem wanted. And we made a super custom frame bag for him. And the handlebar bag was pretty standard too, but in not really standard colors. So it's like we always make customizations, but for some bags we make them more, for some bags less.
Okay, that makes sense. And you mentioned Artem there. Maybe we could pivot a little bit to that. Now, maybe tell the listeners a little bit about how the relationship with Artem and how he came to representing you at Bespoke. How did that journey happen? What was sort of, did he just sort of reach out and say, "Hi guys, I have an idea," or tell us what happened there?
Yeah, it was like something like you say. He ordered a few bags, and after like he received it, he said that he actually want to represent us on Bespoke. We said okay.
Yeah, and after that, how it can work? Yeah.
And how have you had feedback from this show? Have you noticed a difference? Have you like had more followers? Have you had more people reaching out? Did the show have a positive effect on for the brand?
We have more followers now on Instagram. It's like, and we see that we can see actually it's Google statistics shows that we have more visitors from Bespoke website, and we have followers after Bespoke show who bought our products there. So it was really helpful. It was new experience for us, and it's kind of cool.
It's like our first show that we...
Yeah, that like our seven roads.
Well, like I can say, having been there myself in person, the products looked like they belonged there. They were amazing quality. Just, you know, there were a lot of well-known companies there. And when I walked past, I was like, those are very cool. And it was only, it was only afterwards that I found out the fascinating story. So, you know, very much take that as a compliment. They definitely look like they belong there and on the bikes and everywhere. It was very, very cool. I'd like to kind of, for the listeners to, who would find it very difficult to understand the difficult times that yourself and the Ukrainian people are going through from a business point of view and how... And this is, I mean, it's a silly question, how challenging. Obviously, it's been very challenging. But how are you dealing day to day to still create your products? Are you able to still get raw materials? What is your process at the moment?
For beginning, it was really difficult to buy fabrics that we bought. Yeah, we are usually buying fabric from Europe. And during when the war begins, it was really difficult time to took something from the other countries, yeah, because a lot of businesses stopped working and everything like in our country stops, and people wanted to think what they will do in this situation. What now?
Yeah, but the most like impressive for us, because why is actually our business, it didn't stop because of post, like Ukrainian post office keep working from the very beginning of war, really.
It's maybe 10 days this time our post didn't work.
They didn't ship international parcels during 10 days because of they relocated their office from Kyiv to Lviv. And the funniest part, a few of our parcels, as I understood, were bombed by Russians. But first day of war, when they were targeted some kind of with their missiles into Borispil and some kind of some
into the airport where our post airplanes and I don't know.
So we don't know any details, but I don't know any details, but as I understand from our post manager, the like parcels were like bombardment.
Literally bombed. I mean, that's kind of crazy to think. My saddlebag didn't arrive because it was bombed. Crazy. So it sounds like your postal service are heroes in themselves. The fact that they've just, you know, understood how important communication is and,
Can you just try to imagine that our post office workers, like postmen, directly postmen, ride their bicycles near the front line on the region where actually war was and is, and they ride bicycles with a lot of cash for pensions, a lot of mails, like, and some other stuff for people who really need this in these villages, almost abandoned villages near front line. I can imagine how it's even possible, because people actually die there, like right now, and postmen keep working.
Yeah, and I think that's what's for me. And I said it to Artem when I was talking to him. You know, I'm a South African. I've only recently relocated to Europe. I've spent a lot of time in Europe over the years, but I've had to educate myself. You know, we see the international news about what's going on in Ukraine, but like everything, it goes in cycles, and then the news starts to show less of that. But the struggle is still ongoing every day. And it's stories like that, like here, you know, it's things people might not think about, that the humble postman is putting his life at risk to deliver aid, deliver letters. It's amazing. And it's stories that need to be told. And that's another reason I wanted to do this podcast was to tell the stories of people in Ukraine who I think, and that's why I find your story quite inspiring, is that you're choosing to get on with life. And by doing that, by getting on with every day, it's showing that we're not going to be put down, which is, I guess, what the Russians are trying to do. You know, tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth. But is that something that's important to you, to try and keep things as normal as possible every day?
Yeah, and it's really inspiring that not all, it's like one example, like postmen doing their job. Yeah, in our country, everyone trying to do something like really, really small stuff, but it really helped to our country to live.
Yeah, it's when first few first day of war, it's happens that we almost do not have any more XPEG in standard colors for our bag. We just like decided to buy them, and then war started, and we like, oops.
We don't have fabric.
Yeah,
wow.
And we contacted Alexander, Alexander, who supplies us with this XPEG fabric. He locates in Kyiv, and Kyiv was under massive air attack and some like other stuff, and he looking for a flat somewhere because he was directly under like bombardments, yeah. And he was looking for a flat. We helped him to find a flat
in our region, to move from Kyiv to more
with his family, yeah. And he
not so dangerous place.
And Alexander under bombardment went to his storage, took fabric for us. And that's why we do not have any. Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, so we don't have problem with fabric. And another guys who help us a lot in the very beginning, it was lightweight equipment company. It's guys who make backpacks, tents, and another ultralight gear for backpackers. And Yevgen sent us a lot of like fabric in different colors. They have it. And we don't, so they help.
Where are they based? Are they in Ukraine, or where were they from?
They live in Kryvyi Rih, and it's not far from front lines, actually. But he didn't want to move. He has two children and wife, and they decided to stay there. It's pretty dangerous because Kryvyi Rih, it's like about 50 kilometers from front line, I think. Some kind of. Now it's further, but it was about 50 kilometers, yeah. So it's pretty dangerous.
Okay, wow. So So as it stands, you're able to get products, get materials, make, and where are you seeing products being bought from? Where are most of your customers at the moment?
We have a pretty like wide customers, like a lot of customers we have in Finland, in Germany, and Great Britain.
USA
is the most like the our most top seller.
Oh, really? To the USA?
Yeah, and a bit less customers we have in France and Italy, in Poland. Yeah, it's like less.
So it really is quite spread out.
It really inspires to like keep working when you know that people from really all over the world to keep supporting us, because we shipped to South Korea, we shipped to Thailand,
Singapore,
and Costa Rica. It's all over the world, really. It's kind of cool because like, it's global world.
Every this order help us to live and to make our life more normal, like it can be.
Yeah, and that's for me, what, as I said earlier on, that's the inspiring part for me, is that despite everything that's going on, how you're able, and people are supporting you by buying these bags, and it's like these are high quality bags, and it's wonderful to me that by doing this, it's allowing you to, as you say, live in the difficult situation there in Ukraine. And so what is overall, like, that's something I want to shine a light. How are the Ukrainian people feeling? It sounds like it's a really strong community. People are obviously coming together to help each other. But we're on the outside. What is it like there in the country day to day? Is it a feeling of, it's not going to be positive, I know it's not, but is it determination to just stand, to be strong?
I think like we don't have really choice, yeah. I think we just want to make our life normal, protect us and our families, protect our land from these strangers. I guess.
And you know, it's kind of. Like, this war is united Ukraine, like Ukrainians, like nothing before I ever see, I ever saw. Because when the first and second day of war, we have a lot of volunteers who want to go to army, like on the, we have like few ways to how you can serve in army. There is one of you join the military, main like military in Ukraine. And you have a territorial defense. I don't know how to translate it, but it's guys usually who serve not far from their like hometown, kind of, you know. So, and it's also Ukrainian army, but it's like territorial, local. And we have a lot of people who just go there in the first day of war without any, like, actually without, like...
No one pushed them.
Yeah, no one pushed them, and... There actually was not a lot of hope in first day how to like stop this Russian. There are not a lot of belief that it's even possible, but people just go there. And a lot of people do not have any experience. And we do not have a lot of weapon in first days of war. And so it's really impressive like how people can be united, because I went to like local defense group who's patrol town with police forces, because we do not have like we live like we border town, we're pretty close to Belarus, and it was a lot of like everyone saw that from Belarus here someone can invade Ukraine as well. So we like patrol town and land around town looking for saboteurs group and some kind of says guys. And we met a lot of people who made a local like groups with hunters, you know, like guys have weapon. They just united and make some local groups of who patrol their area, like around village. Around like some forest, national parks close to Belarus, and people make their own like cars joined to the like military cars with paint, some special armor, and so on and so on. It's it was a lot of, I don't know this word, self-organized group who really tried to make something very like important for that time. So they protect our land, and maybe that's one of the reasons that we do not didn't have any invades from Belarus, because it's Volyn's very hard, hard area for military techniques, because it's a lot of swamps here, pine forest, and a lot of people with guns who really wanted to kill everyone there who tried to like invade here. Yeah, and I spoke to hunters from Shatsky National Park. Shatsky Park, it's like corner between Belarus and Poland. And guys, for that time there was road wasn't mined like now. So guys simply prepared places where they, if Russian came here, guys decided to cut trees, fell it on the road, and then burn everything with Russians, with forests, with everything. Yeah, it's, and there are a lot of people with guns. Yeah, and another one point, we made a cocktail Molotov. Do you know what is like cocktail Molotov? It's
yes.
Bottle.
Yeah, Molotov cocktail. Yeah.
There was thousand of cocktail Molotov here. It was really thousand. And when it was like
really?
People in Kyiv prepared.
So who was making those? Who's making the Molotov cocktails?
Locals, we. Maybe yesterday children dance or singing, yeah. And today girls gather and make this stuff.
Yeah, everyone. Cocktail.
So one day you're making like bags and that, and then tomorrow we're making Molotov cocktails,
yeah.
And you know, we do,
yeah,
both.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. The children made them, everyone made them. Everyone brings petrol, yeah. Oil, petrol for the stuff. We have one man here, live maybe 300 meters from us. He's like a bit of illness, mental illness. He has some mental illness, and most of their life, his life, he collected empty bottles, but never
glass bottles,
but never actually reused them. So he has a huge storage with empty bottles, and when war started, he just gave it away, and was like, it was thousand. So
it's crazy when you think about going, you know, people walk past every day going, what's he going to do with all these bottles? And then we're like, well, now we have a very good use for all these bottles. listening to your stories, it's, as I say, I use the word inspiring quite a bit already today, but it is inspiring for me to see and listen to like your positivity despite all the things that are going on, you know, very serious issues. But like you said, you have a choice, right? You either give up or you just try and keep it normal and keep fighting. And that's something for me. And I don't want to go too far down that political road, because I think there's enough people, or people a lot smarter than me, who are talking about that. I want to make this more about, you know, you and your company and what you're doing. And I think it's important to know that you're making, for me anyway, you're making bags, bikepacking bags, but just by virtue of just the fact that you are still making your product where you are in those circumstances is very inspiring for a lot of people, because it sends a message like, you know, being determined. And I applaud you for that. It's really quite amazing. Maybe you can tell us a little bit, like, what are your plans? What are your plans for the business? Where do you want to go next? Like, are you kind of new products? What are your ideas? What do you put on your vision board at night?
Yeah, to be honest, we have no any plans now, because only plan is survive and raise up money for our army. we believe that only one way to finish this war is defeat Russians, just simply beat them. And I know guys who always raise up money for some night vision device, thermal vision device, some special stuff, boots, winter clothes, and so on. So guys really need it. We have friends there. So we try to like donate money to for them this stuff to make like our militaries more efficient, like in killing Russians, you know, because like as from what I see in internet, from what these guys told, that most points, the main point is like be more technological, because like if you have drones, if you have like night vision device, some special stuff, you can make be more efficient. So like our goal is help our army and try to keep like our business working, try to donate money for army, for our friends, parents, because no one has job here, you know. My mom lost their job, my father lost part of their job, Helen, mom also lost their job, and so it's pretty like hard to live without money. So we just keep making bags, making good bags, making money, and try to keep running our economic, our family, and help our military. And that's not amazing. It's life.
You're doing what you need to, and you know, it's simple to say, but at the same time, it's a lot of people don't take, you know, that's not the easy route. It's the difficult route. And you know, but I think you're also, I guess you're fortunate that you, before the war started, you'd started your own company, which was brave of in yourself, but now you find yourself in a fortunate position that you're able to have an income, because it's people on the outside, right, that are buying your product, which allows that foreign money to come in, which is, as you just described, very, very important to all the causes.
Yeah, it's super. It's super important.
That, and we're really grateful for our customers, because they really that they don't afraid to order bags in our company, yeah. Now that they know that we are located in Ukraine. Yeah, it's really help us.
Yeah, it's
an important point that actually I hadn't thought about that people could be scared away.
Yeah, we're sitting and thinking, how did we manage to make more, like, how to get more orders when it's war in our country? But, you know, a lot of people just contact, so, hey, guys, here is some prepayment. I want this back. When you will be able, just ship it. And they sent money, so it was super helpful to stay, like, to stay against, like, all the shit on the very
beginning.
Yeah, and
it's really helped us to be strong, yeah, that we understand that, yeah. We will make this bag and it's really needed. Yeah, and some people want to help us.
You already took a money, took prepayment, so you have to make this bag. So
I can understand what you're saying. It must be a good feeling to know that people just they want to help, but at the same time they're like, when you get we know you'll make it when you can. But this way they're also helping. But they're also getting a good product at the end of it, so it's a win-win, right? And having people believe in you that much must be a good feeling.
It's super good feeling. It's like it really helps a lot, really.
Are there other things? So, what can people who are listening? What can they do to help? Not just Seven Roads bags, but you know, Artem was telling us there's a lot of big charities, but there's also a lot of small charities and communities that help. What are ways that people can help?
Oh yeah, I always say you can find somewhere some guys who close to like militaries and donate money for some special equipment. Really,
yeah, it's maybe super I think it's very really helpful to buy some stuff from small businesses. Yeah, yeah, because it's helped to survive.
It helps really.
Well, that's a message I'll definitely put out, is that tell people, post is working, packages are getting out. Because I think a lot of people would assume, okay, there's a war there, nothing's working. Whereas clearly, and that's where I think your story will have a very positive spin, a very positive effect. It's like, it's working. You can support these companies and, you know, the products are moving, which is great to know.
Yeah, we have a lot of small businesses in Ukraine who are still shipping without like any problems, like working and shipping and everything fine. So we need like to keep economic of Ukraine running, and buying from Ukrainians, it's super helpful, because like winter is coming and no one knows how it will be there. For small businesses, foreign incomings, it's super important because I see that now, I can see that money inside Ukraine is like started to end. So people have some amount of money and now it's like ending.
The reserves are starting to run a bit low.
Yeah. And winter is coming, so we will pay more for electricity, for gas and for other stuff. So it will be hard. So if you want to help Ukrainians, you just really can order some stuff for some small manufacturers. Like, as I know, Ukrainians make a lot of bags, shoes, leather stuff, like jewelry and so on. So really a lot.
Okay, well, I think we should chat more off air, and any links you can think of, you can send it to me and we'll put it in the show notes and we'll push, because I think that's where small people like myself, who don't have a big voice, but we have a voice, that we let people know that they don't have to make big change, but if lots of people make small change, it can really help, you know. You know, if you're looking for a new bikepacking bag, I know a good company in the Ukraine that are making high quality bags. You should have a look at them, you know, and things like that. Amazing. I thank you for the time today, guys. I really appreciate you sitting down, and I hope that I can, by doing this episode, we can help in some small way.
Yes. Yeah, and thank you for inviting us. Yeah,
thank you a lot. Really, it's kind of cool. It's like kind of cool to give an interview for like guys in London. It's kind of impressive.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for your time. And yeah, we'll keep talking. We'll definitely be in touch.
Thank you a lot. Thank you.
So, what did you think about that one? Bit of a different show. Bit longer, so if you stuck out till the end, I really do appreciate it. It means a lot. But I think it would have been worthwhile. Hopefully it was worthwhile. I know I certainly took a lot from it. I know I invested a lot into this particular episode because it triggered quite a bit for me. It triggered the heartstrings. And I think trying to give back is an important part of everyday life, really. And in some small way, if we can affect some small change, then we should certainly do our utmost to do that. So I'll put links, as I said at the top of the show, I'll put links in the show notes. I'll do a bunch of reposts on the Gravel Junction Instagram. Since recording, I've actually received a number of additional handles and companies for Ukrainian companies that are making great products, not just bags, not just cycling, but a variation of products. I'll put them out there. Have a look. If something catches your fancy, why not, Ukrainian Christmas presents. There you go. Get a great product, help a great cause. But again, thank you for sticking with us. I did enjoy that. I hope to do more of these sorts of shows. The Discord account that I said I was going to set up, that's getting closer. So I'm going to pop that out there, and then we can have conversations about episodes like today. I'd love to hear feedback on these sorts of topics. Another good show coming up for you next week. Hopefully sitting down with my guests in the next few days. Someone that I think you will be interested to hear from. They've got a good story from the past couple of weeks, but that's all I'll say for now. As always, you keep riding. We'll talk soon. Bye for now.